Now then, this is a story that, you know, occasionally I get a story that comes across my desk and it makes me go, I'm sorry, did I read that correctly? This is The Outfit, the absolutely true story of the time Joseph Stalin, yes, that one, robbed a bank. Lies and double cross, secret police and explosions, a carriage chase, a mattress stuffed with cash, and a one-eyed master of disguise. The revolutionary Joseph Dugdzhevili, and I can't say that, but I think it's Dugdzhevili, and I'm sure I'll be corrected, met with an old friend to rob a bank, or to plan to rob a bank. Here to tell in a much more lucid way than I could ever possibly is the author of The Outfit, David Tallerman. David, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning.
First of all, how do we get his name? How do we get Uncle Joe Stalin's name correct the proper way around?
I was going to say, don't ask me to pronounce anything because I just copy and pasted it, honestly. I have no idea. The audiobook is right, so...
Tell me a little bit about that, how you came across this, because we think of Stalin as, you know, well, I mean, depending on your point of view, you know, Stalinism, not exactly the best reputation in the world, but robbing a bank perhaps would seem to be an unlikely thing, even for somebody like Joseph Stalin. How did it all come about?
You would think, wouldn't you? And yet that's a tiny fraction of the things he got up to in his youth. How did it come about? Well, actually, the publisher came to me with the project. They had, I think basically they'd been Wikipedia surfing, and they stumbled upon this page.
Right.
Which I would recommend to anybody who's, I mean, obviously read the book, but, you know, if you just want to dip into the subject, the Wikipedia page on the Tiflis bank heist is fascinating reading and just completely gobsmacking, as you say.
So, I mean, so it's 1907, so we're still in Tsarist Russia then, basically, obviously, because this, that, and the other hasn't happened. And so what was, we'll call him Stalin, shall we, for clarity throughout.
Probably easier, yes.
Probably easier, I think so. So what was he like then as a young man? And was he hanging with the wrong crowd, David?
Well, I mean, he went to a religious school, so arguably not. He perhaps got in with the wrong crowd, although I think it's probably true that he kind of created that wrong crowd. He was a bit of a rebel. He was a bit of a rock star. I mean, I don't mean that literally, but in terms of personality type, he was a bit of a rock star. Bit of a thug, maybe, but also an award-winning poet.
Well, I was going to say, he was a bit of a lyricist, wasn't he, if he were a rock star, because he wrote poetry, which is something I wasn't aware of, the poetry of Joseph Stalin, but there you go.
Of all the things in it, that was the one that absolutely blew my mind, yeah. And, you know, good poetry, apparently. I mean, I've read it in translation. It doesn't seem amazing, to be honest, between you and me. But, you know, at the time, it was very well regarded.
And this is presumably in, because Stalin was originally from Georgia, so this is presumably, he's in Tiflis, which is presumably a Georgian town. You know, was it a revolutionary aim, or was it just an idea to make some easy cash?
Yeah, very much so. It was basically what the party described as expropriations. I think I'm pronouncing that right. The revolutions cost money. Overturning Tsarist empires cost an awful lot of money. And, you know, they didn't have buckets of the stuff to hand. So they sort of tacitly put out the word that, you know, if anybody were to stumble upon large quantities of money, nobody would look too hard into how that happened.
And this isn't I tell you what, Joe, let's go rob a bank and then we'll go to Marbella. This is a revolutionary aim, which puts it on an ideological plane. So if we're thinking about it, 1907, you're 10 years before, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution. There is anarchists are throwing bombs into open carriages on a regular basis through most of the major European cities. The new century is only 7 years old, you know, with all the spectacular advancements that they're going to be making. So presumably there was an upsurge. This was a time of revolution, a time of people's throwing off the almost feudal shackles that had been that had been basically determining their fates ever since the beginning of time, almost, if you were a serf somewhere near Moscow.
Yeah, I mean, of course we think of Stalinism as, you know, a horrible dictatorial time, which of course it was. It was monstrous. But if you go back a bit further and look at the Tsarist regime, you know, things weren't all sunshine and smiles. It was, it was not a good time to be a Georgian or, you know, a poor Russian or a poor anything anywhere in that area. And there was a lot of anger, and there was a lot of, you know, understandably, there was an awful lot going wrong, and it very much, I think, felt like the wheels were coming off. If you look at the sort of the historical events that were going on in Russia at the time. So, yeah, I mean, people had got to the point where they were willing to grab a gun and grab a bomb and, you know, do what they felt needed to be done.
So tell me a little bit about, because every good heist movie needs a crew. So who were the gang and how many and did they have previous, I believe the saying is?
They have a lot of previous, yes. I mean, there's one instance specifically in the book, but it's one of, a couple actually. There's a point where they go gun running as well. They were hardened criminals. They were hardened revolutionaries. So obviously we have Stalin himself. We have his, lieutenant, who for me was the most fascinating figure in the book. And this is a book where Stalin is a major character. A guy called, I've always pronounced it as Camo, but the narrator of the audiobook pronounces it, I think, Camo. So,
okay.
Whichever is right. But yeah, he's a really intriguing figure. Bit of a psychopath, I think it's fair to say. He would go on long after the events of the book to be interrogated by most of Europe's best psychiatrists. He had no sense of pain, as far as we know. So he was very hard to torture, which is quite awkward when you're trying to get a confession out of somebody. A fascinating figure. And he hung out with these three young, beautiful teenage girls who were just sort of his little posse, and they used to do crimes together and things. The book is full of intriguing characters, all of whom are actually real historical people.
And of course, the thing about Tsarist Russia, I mean, it is a monarchy on steroids, isn't it? It is the gap between rich and poor is quite alarming, but also the whole sort of innateness and grandness and grandeur. And you're almost, I mean, it's almost into the, if you're a science fiction buff like myself, you're in that sort of steampunk kind of era, aren't you? So it's you're just on the cusp of, you know, big inventions are coming in, you know, the world is changing and you've got these institutions that are just ripe for the picking.
Well, one of the things I found most fascinating, and you think of this as being sort of the wrong historical period, but actually it's not at all. The thing with Tiflis at the time is that it has a very Wild West feel to it when you read about it. You know, it was very much sort of on the border of the empire. It was kind of adjacent to Asia. So you have caravaneries and that kind of thing in the city. I think they had camels there, which is a weird thing to think of a sort of Russian controlled country. But yeah, you know, people were openly walking around with guns and things like this. It's, you know, if you were a revolutionary in Tiflis, you would be hoisting your rifle on your shoulder and hoping the police didn't spot you kind of thing. It's,
You could always hide behind a passing camel, I suppose. So what was the plan then, and did it go seamlessly? Because I mean, having started with carriage chase, mattress stuffed and explosions, something tells me it didn't go quite to plan.
Well, I mean, arguably it did go to plan. It was just a very bad plan. it's funny because when the concept was first touted to me, the publisher was very much sort of like, you know, want something like Ocean's 11, you know, this big sort of dramatic heist thing. And after a couple of hours of reading up on it, I was like, it's not going to happen. There was no plan here. There was a lot of preparation. So they had to get guns, they had to get bombs. They had to get people who would work with them. They basically dragged in every revolutionary in the city into this thing. They took over a tavern. They literally took over an entire tavern and just excluded all the customers, sort of politely stood by the doors saying, like, your baby don't want to come in here today. But in terms of plan, the plan was basically wait until this big carriage full of cash comes, throw bombs at it, hope it stops.
Well, I suppose it's brilliant in its simplicity.
but yeah, it did still go wrong, going back to your original question. So even then.
Right. I mean, are we talking carriage chases? Are we talking sort of, you know, if you like, am I getting a pre-revolutionary Stalinist Italian job? I do think that perhaps the Tiflis job is a film that begs to be made with a sort of aging Michael Caine in one of the starring roles.
I definitely think, yeah, if we were going for film comparison, it's a lot more Italian Job than it is Ocean's 11. I mean, in terms of what went wrong, the plan had always been that they would just commandeer the carriage. They would, you know, they would take the carriage out, job done, which is fine until the point when somebody throws a bomb at the horses, at which point you have a carriage with no horses to pull it.
Genius. did nobody think of that? But I mean, we're not going to go through the ins and outs because we want people to go off and write to read the book. But I mean, we are presuming that Starling gets away and goes on to it's not a case of whatever happened to the conspirators, because we kind of know what happened to one of them.
I don't want to get into spoilers. But yes, Stalin did in fact get away, yes.
So, I mean, money presumably went, and we may be thinking this is like one of those crazy little footnotes of history, but if they did get away with the money and the money was spent, well, of course, 10 years later, we have the revolution. And presumably, this particularly large amount of cash, a carriage stuffed full of cash, is going to come in very handy if you want to overthrow a czar.
Well, yeah, as you say, I probably shouldn't be spoiling too much of the book, but then on the other hand, it is all on the Wikipedia page and people can just read it. So another thing they didn't check, along the lines of maybe we shouldn't blow up the horses that are pulling the carriage, they didn't check whether they would actually be able to spend all this money. And the money was in enormously high denomination banknotes, all of which were marked, all of which had serial numbers. So within a day, those numbers are known around pretty much all of Europe, anywhere they could possibly think to spend the money. Also, by this point, the Bolshevik high command are sort of thinking, do we really want this on our copybook? And you can see, I think it's the New York Times report from the time. It was not an event that got particularly good publicity for the Bolsheviks.
Right.
I don't know if any of the money was spent. I mean, some of it was, I'm sure, but... Considering it's an absolutely enormous sum, the actual material gains from it were just ridiculously trivial.
Would it be safe to say then that there may have been some vodka involved in this plan? I mean, that's my next question, because knowing Russians as I do, perhaps there may have been a bit of libation involved and not a lot of thought into it.
I mean, to their limited credit, a lot of these gangs at the time would actually spend the money that they, you know, and considered it as funding their little corner of the revolution. But Stalin's gang didn't do that. They were very serious about getting the money out of the country, trying to get it to Lenin. Probably, yes, they were still drunk most of the time. And of course, these were people in their early 20s. So, you know, what else do you do in your early 20s in Russia or Georgia but drink lots of vodka and, I guess, plan revolutions?
Indeed. When you come to write a book like this, because you have written before, obviously. I'm just looking at some of your back catalogue now, and very impressive it is too. But they seem to be more of the sort of more fantastical, shall we say, than this. But this story is beyond the realms of fantasy itself, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I'd done a little bit of history writing. I'd done short stories. I actually studied history briefly at university and then dropped it for some stupid reason. So it wasn't completely alien to me. And then the book I had out before this, Twendal Wars, set in the First World War. So that was a lot of research. But yeah, it's weird to be coming across these things that, you know, if you made them up, nobody would believe you. The epilogue of the book talks a lot about this. It's always when I was writing it, I was thinking, nobody's going to believe this. Nobody's going to believe this. People are going to think I made this up and be like, oh, why? You know, why couldn't he stick to the historical facts, eh?
Well, it only begs the question. I mean, can you see a series of these going on? I mean, it could be great unknown heists of the dictators. I can see, you know, maybe something on Mussolini, something like that coming up, and, you know, the unknown bank forgery, for example.
It certainly crossed my mind, yeah. I mean, you do wonder what else is out there. And also, I suppose, how you'd go about finding it. The thing I really did want to follow up on personally, and the biggest frustration with writing the book was just that I couldn't get more camo, or however it's pronounced, because his life was absolutely fascinating. If the events in the book are unbelievable, the events of his life that follow are much more unbelievable.
Well, so this is the thing. I mean, presumably, the one of the things is if you're a history buff like what I am, and obviously what you are as well, you go down these rabbit rabbit holes, you know, in encyclopedias, historical book, and then you go, oh, I wonder what happened to that character who was described as having the strength of seven men or feeling no pain. And the next thing you know, if the trail kind of runs lukewarm, you're inventing scenarios, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously there are big chunks of, I mean, there are things in the book, in absolute honesty, that are not invented, but are, you know, are based on specific historians' theories of what happened rather than what we sort of think is, you know, likely to. An example is nobody really knows how much of a connection that Stalin had with the Okhrana. There's a bit of a conspiracy theory that he might have been a double agent at the time, which a lot of people were. It wasn't, we, looking back, that seems like a strange concept. But because the Okhrana were very into turning people, a lot of people had spells of being double agents. So that kind of, that figures into the book. It's very hypothetical. It may have been the case. It may not have been. But yeah, you're always sort of finding yourself having to sort of, if not invent, at least sort of choose between the possibilities.
So what do you hope, apart from a rollicking good read, that people learn? Is it just one of those fascinating and, if you know, truth is weirder than fiction sort of stories?
Oh, I guess a couple of things. I mean, yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think I imagine you're the same, really, from what you've said. One of the things I find so appealing about history is it's always much weirder than you would think it would be. I mean, I did my MA dissertation on witchcraft in the 17th century in England, and that is, you know, however weird you think the world of witchcraft in the 17th century was, it's so much weirder in historical reality. So yeah, that's one thing. I think if it gets people looking at the events, and perhaps reading up a bit more on Camo, that would be interesting.
Presumably, if you've got somebody, if you've been researching, I have to ask you this question as a huge Python fan. If you're looking at, because, you know, Python and history go hand in hand. David, you'll have to agree with me on this one. If you like history, you're going to like the Python movies. So if you are researching witchcraft in the 16th century, which is, you know, 15th, did anybody ever say, she turned me into a newt, but I got better?
I'll tell you what, I did actually, in that brief term that I studied history, I did actually use Monty Python and the Holy Grail in a presentation. So I 100% agree with you on its historical veracity.
This book, which should be the subject of a Monty Python movie, is called The Outfit, the absolutely true story of the time Joseph Stalin robbed a bank for Lenin's revolution. Close enough. It is by David Tallerman, who we've been speaking to today. David, if people want to find out more information about you or about the book or about anything else you've written, and there's some fascinating stuff there as well, where can they find you?
I have a website. It's fairly easy to find. It's under my name. I think it's www.davidtallerman.co.uk. I changed it at some point, so it may be slightly different, but I have an unusual name, so I'm fairly easy to find. And then, yeah, all the usual places. I'm rubbish at keeping up to date on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, but I am there.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. You've turned my tiny head around on this one, but I'm going to absolutely research this and download the book from our virtual bookstore. The book is called The Outfit. Congratulations on the subhead. The absolutely true story of the time Joseph Stalin robbed a bank for Lenin's revolution. It's by David Tallerman, who we've been speaking to today. I'm going to play out with the theme tune from The Italian Job. If you feel the need to sing along in Russian or Georgian, join me. David Tallerman, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been fun.